Ahoy! Welcome to the Loose Goose Radio Show.
You're only supposed to blow the bloody studio doors off.
Oh, sorry, Steve.
I think that might be a winner.
You're a big goose, but you're in bad shape. With us, it's a full-time job. Now, behave.
So, welcome to the Loose Goose Radio Show, where we kicked off with Roy Budd, the main theme, Carter Takes a Train. At first glance, I thought it said Roy Hudd, but that would have been a different program altogether. So, Peter, welcome to the show yourself, of course, and what's it all about, Petey?
Well, what's it all about indeed? December of last year, we had Claire Mahoney, local journalist, freelance journalist on the show, in the studio, interviewing her about her forthcoming book, Welsh Mod, Our Story. Things have progressed immensely, I've heard, with regards to Claire and her book. So in a few moments' time, we're going to have her back on the show, not in the studio, but on the phone, and we're going to have an update about her book. Hence the title of today's show, The Return of Welsh Mod.
So, Peter, I understand you have a personal connection with this book, and I think back in, I think it was 1971, you did your modelling shoot for Great Universal, where you did the Woolsey all-in-one Y-front shoot, but this is your first time you've been in front of a camera since then.
Yeah, well, that was all nylon and a bit sweaty, so I wore something a bit more comfortable for the latest shoot. Indeed, yes, things have progressed immensely with Claire's book. Not only did I write this short piece for it at the tail end of last year, but Claire kindly invited me across to sunny, showery Portalbert a week or two ago to take part in a photo shoot for the book. Now, I hate having my photograph taken, but I was in the hands of professionals there, and even I was pleased with the photos taken. I think Hayden Denman, the photographer, took simultaneous black and white and colour photographs, and probably in excess of 500, if not sort of nigh on 600 pictures. So this was under the M4 over in Portalbert, so in a sort of very rundown sort of residential area, dreary end of town, down at Aberavon Beach on the breakwater, and in an old amid an old school sort of industrial estate. So it was all very glamorous, but it was glamorous in a sort of unexpected way, because when these photographs were sort of uploaded on Facebook, both the Facebook page of the book and my own Facebook page, quite a few people were sort of making comments, very atmospheric, Peter, reminding people of some of the locations and indeed the mood of films from the late 60s early 70s,
which is where we're going musically as well, just in very brief summary, but the music ties into all of this, doesn't it?
Absolutely, because people are saying, those shots remind me of Get Carter, of The Long Good Friday. So indeed, we're about to, shortly before we speak to Claire again, we're about to hear from Francis Monkman, The Long Good Friday, main title. I mean, first of all, Claire, welcome back to the Loose Goose radio show.
Thanks for having me.
No problem at all. Always a pleasure. And the title of today's show is, of course, The Return of Welsh Mod. Bearing in mind the title of your forthcoming book, Welsh Mod, Our Story. And the last time you were with us, actually in the studio, of course, sitting next to me, and both of us are sort of facing Steve and sort of talking about your book. At that time, back in December of last year, it was just an idea, or a fully formed idea, but you were coming towards the end of the pledge campaign. There was still a little bit of uncertainty, but now, of course, it's fully funded. Do you want to tell us a little bit about how the pledge campaign sort of came to an end?
It was just before Christmas, I think, when I came in to see you, and we were just over halfway there. So, excuse me. So it was a bit of a kind of nail-biting time, really, for the book. We didn't really know whether it was going to happen. And then we were really fortunate. Then after Christmas, we got some investment and also a good few more pledges. And I think that often happens with these sort of crowdfunding campaigns, is that things do suddenly pick up the last minute when people realize that it's a kind of all or nothing situation. So so we can kind of breathe a collective sigh of relief really now, and think that the book's actually happening, and we're due to bring it out in November this year.
Mm-hmm. she tends to groove on the water. It's just where you're bound to be. And a monkey kind of flashes on fruits and bananas, so he lives in the top of a tree. But my eyes are made for darkness, so the night time is right for me. Said I'm a night owl, honey, sleep all day long. And now most folks, they like a good daytime. Baby, they like to see the shining sun. They're up in the morning, up and running, till there's just no time for fun. But when the sun goes down and the bright light shine, my daytime has just begun. Oh, I'm a night owl, honey, sleep all day long. Say, turn off those bright lights, baby. You're just about to drive me blind. Draw those curtains for me, Papa. I'm watching you sleep, my love, love shine. Now there's just two sides to this great big world. One of them is always mine. Hey, you can take care of business in the sunshine, baby. I guess you're gonna be alright. But don't come running for Cleo to lend you a hand, cause my eyes can't stand the light. No, I'm a night owl, honey, sleep all day long. Sleep all, sleep all day.
November of this year gives yourself time to basically market the book in time for Christmas. I think we mentioned that in our last show with yourself. It's not going to just sneak out unnoticed, you know, into the shops and onto Amazon and so on. You mentioned you thought about a sort of proper book launch, perhaps even something else coming from the book itself. Do you want to tell us a little bit more about that?
Well, I mean, as you know, from when we did that photo shoot with you, I mean, you know, on just one photo shoot we're taking about, you know, over 500 pictures really, so there's a lot of editing work to do, but also the fact that there are so many pictures that won't make the book, which, you know, I think would be nice, you know, for those to be seen really. So we're thinking about the idea of having an exhibition either at the same time that the book launches or around about that time, so that people can see some of the other pictures. And also I think people will be interested in seeing the process of how the book was put together, because even before we spoke, we started work on this last March, and we took our first photo shoots done at Penarth. So interestingly, we're thinking, what I'd like to do is perhaps choose Penarth as a venue for an exhibition, which I think would be great, because obviously there's the association there with mods.
Sorry, Claire, just hearing you speak there, because I've got a big connection with Penarth. What about the Paget Rooms? I mean, surely the Paget Rooms will have had a connection with mod music over the years, won't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, recently I went to see the Stripes in the Paget Rooms.
Yeah, it's a great venue, isn't it?
Yeah. So we'll be looking for, you know, I think somewhere coastal, I think, would be an ideal location, really. Yeah. And it also, encourages kind of throughput, you know, with people at the weekends, if they're going somewhere to visit, then they're more likely to go around and browse around a gallery. In addition to an exhibition, we're hoping to do some merchandise this year. We've already got the Welsh mod kind of roundel, which I think I talked to you about last time, and we're thinking of doing a patch, maybe that, you know, is like a scooter club type patch. Welsh mod, and maybe some t-shirts, just to kind of build awareness, really, because at the end of the day, it's its own little brand, I think, and the Facebook page is built up so well in the Facebook community that it would be crazy, you know, not to kind of build on that.
Hey,
they would follow me. And if I meet the maker of my tears, I might do another freeze. I sinned and I wished my days away. Just what you make of me and all of this make-believe. Can you forgive me? Let your child return. Did seven sins in these seven hills. You warned they would follow me. And if I meet the maker of my tears, I might do another freeze. Did I run or was I sent away? Oh, I still don't know what's the difference.
And as well as the Facebook page, you've got a dedicated website as well, of course.
Yeah, welshmod.co.uk, which is quite fortunate, really, that if you type in Welsh Mod, that we come up first in the Google search. So,
I've noticed that. That's
a
good
working.
That's good. That's marketing in action there, you know, sort of successful marketing in action, isn't it? But just with regards to when the book comes out, I mean, you want to promote it as a sort of a weighty sort of coffee table book with high production sort of values. Were you thinking of a proper book launch?
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to have a book launch in a bookshop, really. Probably in Cardiff. So we might do kind of a joint thing, something more of a social event and then more of a formal book launch. I also like the idea of maybe having some of the contributors talking about Mod and how it's sort of what it meant to them during their lives. I mean, people like yourself that have contributed. I think it'd be nice to kind of get a bit of a debate, really. I mean, for me, the book's always been about not a book that I'm putting together, but more of the book's just a vehicle for people's views about Mod and their thoughts about it. So I think it's nice to involve the kind of wider community in that.
Would there be any live music at all?
That's a good idea. I mean, you know, there's, I mean, I was thinking about somewhere like Waterstones, really, but there's the Fred Perry shop just down the road, and they've hosted various events and had live bands.
Yeah.
So, you know, that kind of, I think it's quite a nice vibe down at the Hayes, really. It's, you know, because you can bring some scooters down there. So, yeah, that might work.
Yeah, I think, because it's kind of, for me, you know, kind of peeping over the fence into moddom sort of thing. Is, you know, we're talking, obviously, you know, mod is many different things. One of the things that we're most fascinated by, perhaps, is the kind of cultural phenomenon of mod as a movement. But it's also, for me, you know, it always comes back to the music and, you know, looking at the imagery and representations of what mod was all about, but also accompanied by kind of music or references to music at the time. And I think you've really got a fantastic event there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that is certainly true. I think, you know, we do talk about scooters all the time, but we shouldn't really, because scooters...
Nothing wrong with scooters. Peter arrived by scooter this morning.
I wish, eh? Shanks' pony I turned up by.
If I were a sailor washed up on a shore, loneliness won't bother me, 'cause I'll need nothing more than the memories of what used to be while you were lying next to me. Can't stop, I've got to find a way to get back home to stay. If I were a soldier roaming desert lands, even though you're far away, you'd still be close at hand. In the memories of what used to be, while you were lying next to me. Can't stop, I've got to find a way to get back home to stay. If I were a flyer lost over the sea, it wouldn't matter where I was, you'd be next to me. In the memories of what used to be, while you were lying here with me. I can't stop, I've got to find a way to get back home to stay. Loneliness won't bother me, 'cause I'll need nothing more than the memories of what used to be while you were lying here with me. I can't stop, I've got to find a way to get back home to stay.
Peter's chomping at the bit to ask you something,
but
just to annoy him, just for your benefit, because you can see how annoyed his face is now.
Chomp,
right?
Chomp, 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 chomp.
I don't know whether you've noticed, Claire. You probably have, because I know you probably noticed before I did. But there's some bands coming through now in Wales, and if we kind of listen to them, there's a real kind of mod reverential feel to what they do. They essentially are, they're kind of postmodern mod bands, if you like kind of that cheeky interpretation of the term. So I wonder if there's something somewhere you could pull that together, maybe get one of these up and coming sort of pseudo mod bands, and or would that be sacrilege? I don't know.
No, I would like to do that. I think it's really important to photograph and document that, you know, the sort of younger generation now. I don't want this book to just be about nostalgia. I think there's so much of that out there. Obviously, that's an element of it, but it's also about mod's influence all the way through and how that's continuing. I mean, there's a band in Swansea that I would like to photograph and chat to called The Riff, who, I mean, they write brilliant, you know, material of their own, but when they have done cover versions, they've covered, you know, The Who and some of the 60s bands. So that is a clear influence. Even though they wouldn't call themselves a mod band, nobody wants to call themselves a mod band and put that tag on there. I think the influences are clear. And I think that's really important that we don't make this book just about people in midlife.
Yeah, because it points to the future as well, doesn't it? It's, you know, the future of mod is just kind of an encouraging thing, isn't it?
Well, the whole ethos of modernism is that it looks forward. So it looks forward with a kind of, you know, with a kind of nod to the past, you know.
Well, I mean, talking of the past, but also we mentioned there not, you know, bands often described as mod would sort of feel uncomfortable with that tag. I think there's news on the on your book's Facebook page, isn't there, where you've recently made contact with both fans of and members of Beneath based mod band of the 60s, Eyes of Blue, to the extent that there's some posts on there sort of overnight where some fans of the band were sort of slightly confused and said, oh, I wouldn't have classified Eyes of Blue as a mod band, but they were progressive rock, you know?
Yeah, well, they were very much later on. I mean, they're kind of, their mod years were sort of about 66 was the single Supermarket Full of Cans, but by 68, 69, as with many of those bands, they kind of move forward, really, you know, as did the Beatles, as did the Small Faces. But they were very, very much in their style of dress and their sound, a mod band, I would say. And I think they probably recognise themselves as such. I mean, hopefully that's a story that I'll get when I get to speak to some of the members. But I think there was, even in the 60s, probably a reluctance for bands to say, I'm a mod band, because there was so much hype mid-60s around the idea of mod. Mod was very marketable. So, of course, it wouldn't be cool and wouldn't be very mod to say, well, I'm a mod band, you know, we're a mod band.
Of course.
It's kind of the kiss of death. And it was certainly the kiss of death, I think, probably in the revival period, you know, to say you were a mod band. And certainly at the tail end of the revival, I think, again, people were very reluctant to class themselves as mod, because particularly the music press was very, very anti-mod at the time.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It certainly became the demise of the Jam 82-83, I think, where the emphasis was upon synth pop. Any guitar-based bands, especially if they sort of said, oh, we're a mod band, or we dress like mods or whatever. Yeah, it was, as you said, a sort of kiss of death. On a more positive note, and you mentioned earlier how your book and everything that's coming from the book, the possibility of the book launch, the exhibition and so on, you mentioned where this book and what comes from it is very much not just the book itself, but where you document the process. I mean, just thinking back to sort of my shoot over in Portalbert, where you were there, Claire, and of course, Hayden was there, Hayden Denman, the photographer. I noticed straight away where, you know, you picked me up at the station in a sort of black transit van. It was like being picked up, Steve, by the A-team. It was amazing. But we quickly drove off, you know, a couple of side streets, and all of a sudden we're under the first sort of, you know...
Were you blindfolded for the journey?
Not quite, but I was dazzled by it all. Right. I must admit, I was dazzled. Yeah. But quickly we were underneath the sort of M4, you know, in this back streets sort of residential area. And Hayden was off, wasn't he? He was...
Yeah.
Didn't, without saying a word... Well, exactly.
Locations.
Yeah, he was, you know, and constantly all the way through the sort of shoot. I mean, we were together sort of 2.5 hours. He was, you know, we said, that's great lighting over there. You know, I need that shadow. I need that shadow off your umbrella. I could see him looking at the you know, sort of the backdrop always. I mean, what are your thoughts on how Hayden, how his professionalism comes through and what he's looking for comes through in each shoot?
I just think I'm amazed, really, at what he sees. I mean, he sees things that other people don't see. And I think when you see the photographs, I mean, it's quite hard when people see the photographs, the end result. They don't see the process. So I'm quite pleased, because you've been such a good supporter of the book, that you were part of that process and you actually saw that, because you were very nervous about having your photograph taken. But as you soon realise, when you see how Hayden works, that it's, you lose those nerves because it's part of a much larger picture, you know, the background, the lighting, the scenario, you know, under the M4 there with those pillars. He even tries to capture, you know, people will be walking past, and we'll talk about that in a little minute about, you know, their stories, but people will walk past and you can see Hayden trying to get that into the picture, you know. It's the context of the shot is so important, I think, to Hayden.
Absolutely. I was just going to say, part of the, one method I quickly developed, you know, just to take my mind off the fact that it was being photographed, you know, where Hayden was saying, look over his shoulder into the distance, look up there, look down there. Mm. One thing I quickly got accustomed to was, certainly underneath the M4 flyover, was staring at dog poo. And
there was a lot of it.
Yeah, exactly. And I was, you know, must stare at poo to stop myself, you know, being sort of conscious of being being photographed here. But you've already said, Claire, that there were a lot of people that day walking their dogs, obviously giving us some funny looks, but a few people, not only on the day of our shoot together, but on other shoots, people have sort of walked up to you and sort of said, yes. Well, what's going on then?
People always, and the amazing thing about it, people spot the scooter. This happened on the first shoot at Penarth, this happened in Porthcawl. It's happened when I've not gone on shoots with Hayden, he said. People come up and if they see the scooters or they just ask what you're doing, people are curious as to what you're doing. And often initially I'm kind of, oh, we're doing a book. And they go, about what? So I think, are they going to get this? Is this going to be too niche? So you do mention it. And the amazing thing that every single time they go, oh, I was a mod or my brother had a Lambretta. And there was a chap, you know, that we got chatting to, wasn't there, at Aberaba, and we came walking past, just walking his dog, and then reveals that he was a mod in the 60s and then had this kind of strange handshake or greeting, you know, that he said that people would use if they saw another mod walking on the other side of the street. And he did this with such ease. It was just like yesterday for him, you know. And it's just really lovely to kind of see that kind of twinkle in people's eyes about it, that they suddenly thought, oh, gosh, yes. Because, you know, for them, perhaps it was just something that they did in their youth. They think it's all been forgotten about. And that's the wonderful thing, the fact that it's continued so much that we can still talk about, you know, something that happened 30, 40 years ago and meant so much to people.
Absolutely. I mean, it was wonderful while I was being photographed to see that guy come alive. You know, here he was. He'd set out on a sort of, I suppose, daily or twice daily sort of walk with his dog. And suddenly his mind is racing back to his youth. But I tell you what, that sort of hand gesture, that wave he had, I've been trying to copy it ever since.
With
no luck.
Could you show me now?
Whatsoever. Maybe? It was a sort of thumbs up and a sort of
a dip
of a hand at
look
the same
at that.
Time. Yeah. I mean, it was.
It's like the Masons, isn't it? You know?
It was the mod Masons.
Full of the winter, and I won't be found in the shadows hiding sorrow. And I can wait for fate to bring around to me any part of my tomorrow. Cause it's so. Yesterday when my plans were giggled in line, I had a son while on the run, and his love brought a tear to my eye. Maybe someday he will up and say that I'm a pretty nice guy. Oh my. And it's all
And of course, Claire, you had yourself and Hayden, you had a very busy day, not just with my shoot in the morning, but then you were straight over to Barry that afternoon.
Yeah, we went over to Barry to photograph someone who was an original mod. He was from Blina, a chap called Nicholas, and he's from Blina, Gwent, Nantyglo area, and he now lives in Barry. So we decided to photograph him on the coast, really, because Barry's quite an iconic location. And the wonderful thing about him is, again, you know, as soon as you start photographing him, there's a sort of lightness about people, obviously, you know. And he wanted to try and recreate some of the shots. He sent us some original pictures, some fantastic pictures of him on his mini. He had several minis. And, you know, but the thing about the pictures is that there's one shot of him when he's standing by the big wheel at the fun fair, and he's got a parka on. And I just noticed his thumbs. He's got his thumbs outside the pockets, just as the mod stumps, you know what I mean? That was always a thing about when you tuck your hands in your pockets, you've got your kind of thumbs out. It's kind of, again, one of those kind of little symbols that only people in the know would get. And, you know, and he was doing that, you know, 40-odd years later, still doing it, immediately knowing how to stand as a mod.
I mean, it's fantastic. I mean, these pictures, of course, can be viewed already. They're not necessarily the pictures that are going to make it into the book or the exhibition, but many of the each and every shoot that you've done can be seen on the book's Facebook page
and on Instagram as well.
Yeah, excellent. And with you were determined, you mentioned instead of passing, you were determined to get shot over in Barry at the fun fair, because you sort of made connections with wider sort of cultural references. I mean,
well, it was interesting because Jeff actually said, oh, why the fun fair? But for me, fun fairs just smack of kind of, you know, 50s and 60s films, because, you know, it was where in all those kind of teenager films and mods were, you know, after Teddy Boys, the kind of the second round of teenagers, that's where everybody did their courting, that's where everybody went, you know. It was the British seaside, people couldn't afford to go abroad. So for me, you know, there is a kind of cultural reference there. That's where people kind of hung out, really.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I'm thinking about one of the other shoots and other photographs you've got on the Facebook page. I'm thinking of Adam's shoot, where I think I've sat down quite recently with one of my film colleagues. Not film studies, but an actual filmmaker, Inga. I'll give Inga a shout out.
Hi, Inga.
Inga was amazed. She looked at Adam's photos and she said, I didn't know mods wore capes. Do you want to say something about, because personally, I think Adam's photos are amongst the best you've taken thus far. I think the portrait shot of him is incredible. Stands up as a piece of art in its own right. But he's there in this cape and this cravat. Do you want to just say a little bit about...
The cape is a cape from Lord John that he picked up in a charity shop for £10. Adam is a great character because Adam is he's from Swansea, and he came into mod in that kind of barren period, really. The revival had long gone. We were kind of just at the beginning of acid jazz, and here was Adam. He said, discovered mod through his parents, and but he really got into the kind of psych scene, kind of later 60s. He really liked that look, and he spent some time in Leeds and, you know, hung around with like-minded people that were also into kind of garage and freak beat. He played in a band called the Tombstones up there. But he came back to Swansea and he was wearing kind of hipsters. He records a story about him wearing these pink hipsters on the Kingsway and just being chased down the Kingsway by people, you know. He was just like, you can't wear pink hipsters in Swansea. You know?
Oh, blimey.
And with this kind of longer hair and...
Yeah.
The look that he's just cultivated, you know, over the years, and still wears and still has, and it's part of him. And I think that's what came across in that photograph. It was part of him. It wasn't just the clothes. It was his attitude, his whole ethos, is that really. And it was all about wanting to be different. And something in the interview that we did a couple of days later that really kind of chimed with me was that we went on a. He was kind of, as I said, he was at the tail end of the revival, so obviously it was a scooterist period, didn't it? Lots of all the rallies, so he went to some of the CCI rallies, this, that, and the other. And he remembers, he said, I think it was the Isle of Wight, and he said that he saw these guys hanging outside the shop, and they had these hipsters on with kind of longer hair, very late 60s look. And he heard someone say some disparaging remark and refer to them as swirlies. And he said, as soon as he heard that, he thought, well, they're doing something different. I want a bit of that.
Yeah.
And I think that's a very kind of individualist, sort of modernist view, you know, to take, that you want to be different. It's not about following the pack. It's not about going around in a great big gang of people clad in parkas. You know, it's not, as much as people cite Quadrophenia and everyone riding down to Brighton in a big group, that's not really the true essence of mod. That's the media image of mod.
Can I ask you something, Claire? Which has been on my mind for a number of weeks now, has really been keeping me awake at night, actually. When you were choosing these characters to populate the book in terms of the photographs, I'm guessing you were thinking of kind of a suave, debonair, sophisticated, knowledgeable, well presented, handsome, photogenic. But why did you choose Peter?
Yeah,
I was trying to cut him off.
Then. Oh well, that we guessed it, didn't we, listeners? We guessed that one. We knew he was going to have a dig there. You can't go any lower, Steve.
I couldn't resist it. Sorry, I had to go there.
What I was just going to say, Claire, well, whilst we're still giggling and laughing, and Steve, of course, when you mentioned swirlies there, there was a division within mod during the 90s there, where some seemed to go off towards the sort of paisley shirt, Lord John sort of look, you know, with sort of slightly longer hair. And then there was also that, you know, you had references like Get Carter being thrown around and people adopting the sort of hard mod suede heady, you know, shaven heads and suede heady type of look.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I hope that the book, well, the plan is that the book will cover, either through photographs, memories, all these aspects of mod. I very much don't want to just have a book full of what everybody thinks mod is. You know, this is, you know, as much as it's about what people wear and the music that they listen to, it's more of a kind of the internal story of mod, what mod means to people. That's in essence what the book is about. So it's not necessarily about, there's so many people that, you know, won't be in this book that could be in this book if I was writing a history of mod in Wales, which this book isn't. It's more a kind of snapshot of mod here and what it means to people, and how it, you know, and I've been quite careful about who I've picked, just because I want different kind of aspects and different eras to be represented by these people, different ways of dressing, really, not the kind of archetypal, as I said before, kind of mod in a parka with, you know, a target on his back.
And likewise, I mean, that's really insightful there, but and likewise, the locations that you're choosing are, in some respects, typically Wales. You went to show sort of valley life and so on. But some of the locations capture Wales in all its sort of diversity.
Yeah, I mean, that again, you know, you don't expect to see images of mods and, you know, beautiful Lambrettas, you know, halfway up a hillside in Neath. You don't expect to see that. And I really like that kind of schism, really. I like the fact that it's not what you expect. And this is something that we talked about, that, you know, was it probably more difficult to be a mod and to be different because there were fewer of you in Wales, you know, at that time, the time we were growing up. But also, I think, doesn't the valleys in particular lend itself to, you know, the kind of tribal nature of mod? So in a way it was kind of natural, and obviously in the revival and in the late 70s, 80s, mod was absolutely massive, particularly in South Wales. All the valleys had little catchment areas of mod, and often they congregate down in Ponty at cafes or come down to Cardiff. And again, it suited the tribal nature of it, I think.
We'll be right back. I mean, you mentioned the Valleys, and of course, you know, mods have and still do ride around in sort of Italian scooters, Lambrettas, Vespas and so on. You've also mentioned that, of course, you know, what was particular about Welsh Valley life was the centrality of the Italian cafe, and that was...
We had Italian cafes. We had our Bar Italias of our own, you know, because, you know, the Welsh Valleys had a strong Italian community. I mean, I remember that growing up. My mum had Italian friends. We went out to Italian restaurants, Italian cafes. That's where mods used to go. I mean, as far back as the 60s, and there's the Parkview Cafe in Ponte, which, you know, has been owned by the same family for generations. And mods used to go there in the 60s, were naturally drawn to it.
Very good chips there. They're very good, yeah.
And you've done a shoot there,
We did a shoot, yeah, okay. where we tried to gather as many people that connected with that cafe. But we're going to do a second shoot there where we're just focusing on three individuals that used to frequent the cafe. Because there were a group of mods called the Parkview Mods, but that was kind of later. That kind of was born out of the revival. But mods used to go there, as I say, from the 60s, really. And what better place, you know, how lucky were they to have, you know, good coffee? Mods and good coffee. I mean, it just goes hand in hand.
Absolutely. Or sort of Parker and Scooter, or other sort of cliche that I could come out with.
Can think of.
Yes. But thinking about the sort of Parkview Cafe and so on, I mean, what other locations, very, very quickly, what other locations have you got planned?
Well, we want to go up to North Wales. We're going to go up to Port Marion, definitely, and organise a shoot there because it's so iconic and it just has, you know, that sort of 60s connection with the prisoner. We want to go up to Rhyl because Rhyl was, you know, again, another seaside town that attracted mods. And North Wales had quite a big northern scene as well, Northern Soul, which had a big influence on the mod scene. And, you know, the dudes up at Prestatyn. We'd like to go over to Porthmadog and Blaenafastyniog. Again, there's so much beautiful landscape up there that we want to photograph. So, a trip to North Wales, a few days up in North Wales is certainly in the offing. We're also going out to Spain to interview a chap called Steve Garland, who was connected with Ponte, who was a hairdresser and also in a band, and now lives in Spain with a target-shaped swimming pool.
Oh, doing the kind of fantastic.
Keith Moon. Sort of thing.
I would say that itself sounds like something out of a sort of, you know, a brick flick, you know, sort of British sort of gangster movie. We're not suggesting that he's up to any criminal activity over there, of course. Not suggesting that, listeners, for a moment. But Claire, this hasn't, your book, as it's been pieced together here, isn't happening in a sort of vacuum. I mean, there are other books planned and with regards to sort of mods, obviously not overlapping in any great way with yours. I mean, but you're involved with or have been involved with Graham's reprint, shall we call it?
Graham Lentz. I've just sent back his manuscript of the second edition of The Influential Factor, which Graham published in 2002. Obviously such a lot has happened on the mod scene, you know, between then and now, that Graham decided to do an updated version. And I had the pleasure of reading it, and it's I can't recommend it enough, really. But Graham's, it's kind of a historical history of mod book, but Graham's updated about 40% of it with various new interviews with bands like the Stone Foundation that have kind of come onto the scene and have found a great deal of success, obviously, with Paul Weller's involvement.
Yeah.
And other characters like Jill Caitlin, who was a kind of original mod and has been featured in some of Tony Beasley's books. But there's some really interesting parallels between her experience of growing up in the Midlands and that of London, which weren't included in the original book.
I would say I remember the first edition well. I mean, I think I got my copy off sort of Detour Records, and it had a very stunning cover. And indeed, you know, I remember that the people who are interviewed in there, even in the sort of earlier edition, that you wouldn't normally expect to sort of crop up in sort of mod histories. I think, in fact, Graham's interviewed members of French Boutique for the
Yeah, that's right, there and there. Yeah, he's interviewed various French mods as well and Japanese mods, mods from Australia. So it's a complete kind of global approach to modernism, really. But he's spoken to French Boutique. I think you're quite a big fan, aren't you?
Yeah, and I think we when we did the show to do with Tony Beasley's book Mojo Talking, I think the soundtrack, the sort of playlist we included on that show, tried to go global, and we had Popping Court and we had French Boutique. Yes,
you're a sophisticat.
I am, yes.
Some renown.
Exactly, as he tucks his cravat in his top here.
Well, when you turned up for your photo shoot, you see, you were very style counsellor.
Well, I was doing my best. You sort of forewarned me. You said, you know, the photo shoot, Peter, is likely to be under the under the M4 and so on. So I deliberately, I dressed in a sort of mod-like way, but of course I thought, yeah, I get it, you know. I wanted to look as incongruous as possible. I wanted to look like somebody, in a way, both in place, in the right place, but in the wrong place at the same time. Thank you so much for today. I was just going to say, you've been in the right place. Myself and Steve are in the right place.
Well, I'm in the right place.
Well, I think I'm in the right place. I'm in the studio. That's
I'm the other side of the table from you.
Oh, yes. So you are. So you are. But, thanks once again, Claire. But just I mean, obviously, this is still a very organic process. We've got the title of the book, you know, Welsh Mod, Our Story. Is that set in stone, or is that still something that you're
working on? Obviously, the Welsh Mod part will be, but it's not set in stone, and neither is the cover shot. There will be a new cover that will be revealed shortly. And also, I quite just something that was born out of a conversation that you and I were having, really, and that I'll be talking about with other people, mm-hmm. that we're thinking of maybe having a kind of tagline that plays on the Pete Meaden line, clean living under difficult circumstances, which would be clean living under different circumstances. Because I think, you know, the Welsh mod is a story that hasn't been told before. It is very unique, that there is no other book quite like this, you know, on Wales. So, yeah, so clean living under different circumstances, which I think probably kind of encapsulates what being a mod in Wales, South Wales, especially the industrial part, was like.
Yeah, absolutely. That it was in, there was connections, but it was very much, yes, in opposition to what was going on in London, what was going on in sort of the home counties and, elsewhere across the UK.
And you wouldn't get a cappuccino for love nor money. Or you might do if you were lucky enough to have an Italian cafe.
Well, exactly. It would be frothy coffee, I think.
Yes. It would be frothy coffee. Yeah. More froth than coffee.
Absolutely. And, you know, you probably get a piece of buttered toast with it as well on the side.
Claire, we've covered so much ground now. Fantastic interview. Just listening again, I'm literally peeping over the fence, listening to you two talking. All the references are there, and hearing you both talk about this stuff. For me, I'm not as familiar with the scene in any shape or form as you two, and it's so kind of evocative for me. I can almost see what you're talking about. So thanks very much. I'm really pleased you managed to get the book off the ground. We look forward to it coming out in print and welcoming you back on the Loose Goose to talk about its success, hopefully.
Brilliant.
Yeah, I was going to say, our pleasure once again, Claire, and who knows, we might be do a roving goose on the night of the book launch.
Yeah, that would be good, wouldn't it?
That could work.
Mm. Absolutely. And then Steve Wolf whistling in the background. I'm sure that wasn't
is that listeners, what a roving goose sounds like?
exactly.
Anyway, Claire,
all right, thanks, good to talk to you.
Thanks very, very much. All the best to you. Speak to you soon.
Okay,
thank you.
Bye
bye.
Bye now.
Here we are at the closing link, listeners.
We are. We're here. We're ready. Are you here, listeners?
I've been ready for about 5 minutes.
I'm a late comer to all this. He says, shaking his bit of paper and making sure, where am I? Who am I?
Have you done your warm-up?
I have, yes.
Okay. But going back to the interview with Claire, Peter, what a great guest.
Yes, Claire's been a guest on the show now twice. Pleasure to have her on the show. And, you know, it's great to hear her talking, not just about sort of mod, Welsh mod, but, you know, placing all of this within a sort of Welsh context, within a global context, and so on.
And as I said then, you know, people misinterpret me, they think I'm taking the mic when I'm not. I mean, literally, it is literally like listening over the fence to, you know, two people who totally know the territory, bouncing these references off each other. It's such a great insight into modernness, which is, you know, not really my thing. I know it through you, really.
Well, I mean, I think for yourself and for, I would say, the majority of our listeners, you know, it's an education. It's a true education in with regards to all things mod, all things Welsh.
And, of course, pictures from today's show and other kind of points of interest will eventually be available on the Loose Goose radio show page on Facebook. I think we're also on Twitter, by the way, if people don't know about that. We're all over the place. We'd love to hear from you for ideas for future programs, and we also love it when you respond to the show with some very kind and interesting comments, so please keep them coming.
Please do. Please keep them coming. And indeed, we'll sign out with a bit of a caper. It's caper time.